I'm Sarah.
Hey, I'm Trish.
And this is part of our brief series.
Absolutely.
So, what are we talking about today?
Oh, it's a story. It's a story that I tell a lot when I speak. It really relates to a lot of different things. I do it a lot when I talk to healthcare professionals, but it's also true for lawyers. So, for those of you who don't know me, I come from a multiracial background. My grandmother is Korean, and she lived with me. She passed away, unfortunately, like 3 years ago. She was 94 years old, though, but she was so cute. And she lived with me from the time I was in second grade all the way until she passed away with my mom and dad. I don't still live at home, but
I'm so glad you clarified that.
Yeah. But anyway, when I was in law school, my grandmother was always worried about safety. She was always scared, just really, really paranoid. I wonder where I got it from. But always worried about safety, and she knew I was living by myself in my apartment in Chapel Hill. So she and I went down to the shelter to adopt a dog for me. And I got this dog. It was this black puppy, and he was listed as a lab mix, okay? So I got back home, and my dad saw the dog. Oh, he was furious. Oh, he was so mad. He's like, "Do you see the feet on that dog? It's going to be huge." I'm like, "It's a lab." Anyway, it was a woof.
It was not a lab.
It was a woof. That dog was, he had three legs, but he was 85 pounds with three legs. He was humongous. And anyway, so the first year, Max, my sweet Max, he's such a good boy. But anyway, the first year I came home, I had a summer internship with the firm that I would ultimately go to work for originally. And my dad's like, "You're not bringing that damn dog home, are you?" I'm like, "Yes, Daddy, please." So what he said was, "Fine, you can bring the dog home, but here's the deal. Your paycheck that you're getting this summer goes to an invisible fence. Because I don't have a fence. I'm not building a fence. That dog can't stay in the house all day long. You know, it needs some containment." So I said, "All right." And I did that. And forked over my paycheck. He went ahead and purchased the fence and put it in. So during the day, I got the dog trained. He was in the fence, whatever, all of that. So during the day, he would stay home with my grandmother, which was, talk about manipulation. She wanted the dog because she knew it was going to come home for the summer, and she felt safe with a wolf in the house. I mean, really, that's what it was. Because she was home all day alone because mom and dad worked, and so I was too. So anyway, so she was like, I'll take care of Max. And she had told my dad this. She'd watch him. That was part of the deal, the invisible fence. So anyway, I go to work one day, and I come home, and my grandmother is very dramatic. But she's also very upset, frantic. She says, oh, Max. I was like, what? She's like, "Max, get out today." I'm like, "What do you mean Max got out today? What do you mean? He got out of a fence." And I was like, "Mama, what are you talking about?" And she's talking about the invisible fence. He had run through the invisible fence. And he's sitting right there on the floor. So I go, "Well, Mama, what did you do? She goes, I pulled him back in. I said, "Mama, you know when you pull him back in, it shocks him on the way back
again
in too." She goes, "I know, shocking me too." So I use that story. I love that story because, you know, what the point of it is, and I'll let you chime in on this, Sarah, because we talked about this earlier, you know, is sticking together. You go through the fence together, you get burned together, you live together, you die together. And it's an important lesson in so many different ways. So tell us a little bit about sticking together from your perspective.
You know,
how do you get burned and how do you survive?
It's so interesting. So I was actually on the phone with a general counsel for a company that is located up in, I believe, either New Jersey or Philadelphia area just last week. And we were talking about trying to resolve a case. And he said, "But if we resolve the case, are we really out of the case?" And I was like, "Yeah, if you settle, you're out." And he goes, "Not up here, you're not."
Because
everybody cross claims against each other. And So where they are, a plaintiff or an injured party files a lawsuit against a group of individuals, whether healthcare providers, companies, whatever, who have allegedly caused the injury. And what all of the defendants up in that part of the country do is they all cross claim against each other and say, "It wasn't me, it was you." And I said, "Oh, no, we don't do that down here. We would prefer to make the plaintiff's lawyers actually earn what they're going to earn if they're going to win the case."
Right.
I'm not going to do their job for them. But it's because down here, we really do try not to point the finger right. at co-defendants. And it's important because the plaintiff may not have much of a case against you individually. They might have a better case against your co-defendant, but that's their problem to worry about. Mm-hmm. You've got to defend your client, right? Your client should not be defending his or herself as by pointing the finger at another co-defendant. It just makes the plaintiff's job all that much easier. And then you get lumped in with them. We're a joint and several liability kind of state. And all of a sudden you've got a verdict against you. And so particularly in the litigation context, that's really important. Mm-hmm. But we also see it in the actual development of the facts of our cases. So particularly in healthcare cases, you know, everything has to be documented in the medical record. Mm-hmm. And not throwing your colleagues under the bus in the medical record is probably a really good idea most days. So do you need to document what is significant and pertinent and important to the care of the patient? Absolutely.
And honest, yeah.
Yeah. And you have to be honest about it, but you don't have to put in, you know,
subjective stuff that you weren't there and you don't know.
Right. Right.
That's the problem.
I came on. It was clear that my colleague hadn't been doing their job. Yeah. This is awful. I can't believe they put me in this position. And now I had to deal with the fallout. You know, none of that relates to the actual care of the individual.
And they don't really even know. They weren't even there.
They weren't there.
So I'll tell you a real case that I had that I think is a really good example of this sticking together theory when it doesn't work. So I had a case involving a 39-year-old man who came to the ER. He had he was allergic to sulfa, a drug, an antibiotic drug, and he had been given Bactrim, I think is what it was, mm-hmm. and they're a derivative, they're cross-reactive. So if you're allergic to one, you're allergic to the other. And he had taken it and knew he was allergic to sulfa and thought he was having what's called an anaphylactic reaction or a severe inflammatory response where it's life-threatening.
Yeah.
So he goes to the ER and he tells the providers this. So everybody working on a tunnel vision kind of a approach is thinking, well, he's allergic to this. He took this. Therefore, all of this is anaphylaxis. As he's there, so they give him steroids and the stuff they normally do.
Try and reverse the drugs.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're doing all of that. And there's only one ER doctor there. And there's a bunch of patients for whatever reason, you know, it's a full moon or whatever it was. And the nurses, during his course, he continues to complain of shortness of breath, chest pain, not being able to breathe kind of a thing. So the nurses are coming to get the doctor several times, and they're documenting, you know, informed doctor, patient had shortness of breath, doctor says breathe in a bag, I don't know, whatever it was. It was tell him to calm down, give him Ativan, which is a relaxing drug. And this goes on for a few hours, and the doctor doesn't come see the patient. Ultimately, the patient coded, basically his heart stopped beating, and he died. He's having a massive heart attack.
The whole time?
Well, I guess so. I mean,
it wasn't a severe reaction. Right. It might have been a mild reaction,
exactly.
But then he had the heart attack.
Now
yeah.
And the nurses just documented over and over, doctor refused to see patient, stuff like this. So guess what happened? I bet you can guess what happened when the case kind of all fell out, because that's what the nurses testified to. I mean, they said, one nurse said, I quit my job over this. We tried to get him. He wouldn't come. You know, on and on, just blaming the doctor. Well, have you ever heard of the chain of command? If you thought as a registered nurse that your patient needed a doctor at the bedside and the doctor wasn't coming, why weren't you calling your supervisor?
Right. Why weren't you doing something?
If you thought this kid was a man, whatever, is dying in the ER and the doctor's not responding to you, you have an independent professional obligation to do something about it. So guess who had to pay a lot of money to settle the case? The hospital.
Yeah.
Not my client. They got burned for trying to burn him. You know, they got shocked. My doctor may should have gone to go see the patient, but at the end of the day, they exposed themselves because they were so busy trying to make sure they were blaming somebody else that they forgot their own responsibilities professionally, personally, ethically to their patient. And so that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. And that doesn't just happen in a professional healthcare setting. It's at work too. You know, how many times have you seen a lawyer, a senior partner, go on the phone or in court? Well, my paralegal didn't do that, or my associate was here the last time. I don't know why they did X, Y, and Z. I have seen that.
Oh, it makes me so mad.
It makes me mad, too. It's really wrong. It's really, really wrong. And it's a scapegoat mechanism, and it's kind of like, if I'm the judge, I'm not, but if I were,
God forbid.
I'd kind of be like, well, why are you hiring people like that? I mean, like, why are you sending this person into court if you're going to turn around and tell me that they're not competent? I mean, I've literally heard some awful stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just makes you look bad, too. You're the captain of the ship, right?
That's right. It's your responsibility.
Yeah, yeah. And we all have responsibilities. So yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah, stick together. Don't badmouth each other.
Shock me, too. You go down, we all go down together.
On that note, I think that's it.
Over and out.